Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hello and welcome to Scran, the podcast passionate about the Scottish food and drink scene. I'm your host, Rosin Derskine, and on today's episode, I wanted to explore the world of wild dining. This is an area of the food and drink industry that's seen a steady growth in popularity, particularly since the pandemic. I wanted to hear more about why people are choosing to eat in an outdoor setting and what they can expect from these experiences. Who better to hear about this from than Chef William Hamer, who runs Wild Cabin, which is based in a quirky greenhouse in the stunning Arkenglass Estate in Lough Fyne. William has travelled the world mastering the art of cooking by fire. An experienced and talented chef who is an expert in wild cooking, William connects food, fire and nature with an ethos of supporting local businesses and suppliers and sourcing the finest organic and sustainable ingredients. Here's my chat with him. I hope you enjoy. I'm joined by Chef William Hamer of Wild Cabin Kitchen. Hi, William. How are you?
Very good. How are you?
Yeah, fine. So we were supposed to come and see you, but the weather has stopped that. So we're chatting online now. I'd quite like to sort of find out a bit more about a trend for kind of wild dining in Scotland. But for anyone that doesn't know you or hasn't heard of your business or what you do, could you kind of take us right back to the start and tell us a bit about your career up until this point?
Yeah, for sure. It's kind of been an unobvious chefing career, really. I started many years ago as a kitchen porter, which I think quite a lot of people do. Well, you know, quite a lot of chefs will usually start out washing dishes. And I was in a little countryside pub in England. The pub I was working for offered me this kind of NVQ. And I thought, you know, that sounds pretty good. Maybe that will allow me to get some work when I'm traveling. So I did this, you know, this year's course, you know, not really knowing if I wanted to be a chef or not, but, you know, kind of enjoying it at the same time. And then I started traveling shortly after, picking up, you know, the old kitchen jobs in New Zealand and, you know, in other places around Europe, Switzerland and France. And, you know, I was kind of, you know, starting to really enjoy it and having a lot of fun. And yeah, but it was never this thing that I was going to do forever. It was always something, you know, I'm just a chef now, but we'll see about the future. And it wasn't really until I moved to North Uist in the Outer Hebrides to work at Langish Lodge, which was an old hunter's lodge and specializes in fish and game. And it was only there really that I think I really started to see a career as a chef, and I started getting outdoors on my days off and making fires on all these beaches. And I don't know if you've been to North Uist or the Outer Hebrides, but it's, you know, it's pretty vast. There's no one there. And I think all those kind of elements kind of inspired me to keep making fires, and it, just this love for cooking sprung upon me. And I think, yeah, it was really from that moment onwards, it kind of developed. I remember the Hebridean baker messaging me randomly one day saying, hey, William, I was just wondering if you want to join me in the BBC on the beach, you know, for this wild cookout, this wild lunch. And I thought, oh, okay, you know, that's pretty surprising. Yes, you know, of course, I'll meet you there and we'll have lunch. And so we met up and we cooked. And I think at that moment onwards, the desire for outdoor cooking from more and more people, you know, has progressed, and I was falling in love with it more and more. And, you know, that took me to Glasgow very briefly. And then one day, you know, I got a message from Charlie, who owns the cabin company. There's two Nordic cabins just up the loch there from me, and a short conversation later, and we were talking about starting up the Wild Cabin Kitchen, which is, you know, the combination of kind of the land we're around, you know, these wonderful, you know, Western Isle ingredients, and a nice bed to rest in afterwards. So that's in quite an overview, a very, very short story of my career so far.
So the Wild Cabin Kitchen, that's obviously come from people's want to kind of get back to nature and like kind of to take you up on what it is that you offer. So why do you think that is? Like, why do you think it's become quite a sought after thing to do?
We've been sitting in restaurants for a long time. You know, we're all so familiar with the restaurant setup, the restaurant scene. You know, you go in and you look at the menu and you're tucked up nice and warm and you have a nice meal and you know, and you leave, and it's very familiar. And I think wild dining has just, especially after COVID, you know, where we were getting out a lot more, maybe into the forest, and if not, we were cooped up and really desiring it. And I think we just want that, a different experience now. I think, you know, if you couple dining and nature together, it really offers something really, really refreshing, I think. And I'm not taking anything away from restaurants, because, you know, you can have some really marvelous experiences. But I think people are just ready to dine somewhere else and to breathe in the wild whilst they're eating. I think it creates this, you know, this authentic, you know, feeling within oneself when you're eating outdoors. I think, you know, your attention is on so many other natural elements instead of just, you know, head down looking at your food. You know, maybe there's a few other people dining around, but outdoors, you know, you've got the sky, the mountains, the trees, you know, the weather all playing this part in making quite an authentic experience.
You've talked about how you've travelled around the world. You've worked in some Michelin star places, and you've also been up to US. So how was that? You know, you've obviously gone from different types of restaurants and circumstances to now your own thing. You're cooking by fire. Like, it seems a bit more sort of like rustic almost, but you know, what would you sort of say about all your different kitchen experiences?
I use the Michelin star restaurant experiences as a way to, you know, kind of refine my knowledge. You know, it's very much a learning process. And I think because I'm here tucked away on Loch Fyne, making fires and cooking every day, quite a lot of the time I'm on my own. You know, I'm trying to create dishes on my own. I'm working the fire on my own, and I'm hosting these experiences on my own most of the time. So you kind of need to get out there and go and join other teams, join other restaurants in order to keep learning off others. And being inspired by other chefs is really, really important, especially in my career, to develop. And so, yeah, they are very different. And I think regardless of the style of food these places offer, it's more just being amongst other professionals and talking and discussing new recipes and foods and just feeling inspired. And I think that's why I go to these different places and travel, and it's just to kind of soak as much of the learning process up as possible. Then I come back and I put them by the fire, and maybe that's something I've learned at one of the restaurants. I'll say, well, do you reckon you could use that ingredient on the coals? And sometimes it's a straight no, and sometimes it's maybe if I add this, and so it's just a matter of learning for me, really, is getting out to these restaurants and being part of a team, as opposed to being stood over the fire and, you know, being part of a very small team, which we are at the moment.
And how, this might seem like a bit of a daft question, how hard is it to cook over fire? Because I feel like people probably look at it and go, that wouldn't be that hard. But actually, it's probably, I would assume it's more difficult than just sticking something in an oven.
Well, it can be difficult, but it can also be, you know, really, really quite simple. If I'm doing cooking demos or demonstrations, then, you know, I'll do, you know, flatbreads and ember baked onions and, you know, all this kind of stuff that anyone can do. And that's, you know, that's the point of the cooking class. It can be really quite achievable. I think maybe the hardest part of it is, you know, managing the heat and maybe understanding a little bit about what wood you're using and just kind of managing how hot the fire is and when to cook on it and when to place different types of ingredients at different times. Because maybe, for example, if I have a really hot fire and the planchers smoking hot and I try and cook carrots, for example, then the carrots are just going to burn you'll just have a really crunchy burnt carrot. Whereas if I, you know, let the fire burn down until, you know, kind of a glowing bed of embers, and then cook the carrots for longer and slower on the plancher still, then you'll start to get that nice caramelization going on, and you'll start to get a really nice, well-cooked, well-balanced carrot. So it is just understanding those kind of base, you know, those basic rules is the hardest. And then, you know, I mean, I'm always experimenting with the fires, and it can be difficult, and especially in the winter months when it's a little bit darker, and you're trying to cook, you know, 6 or 7 courses, you know, that's also challenging. But yeah, it all depends. But I think, you know, it can, you know, anyone can get out there and cook. It's just practice, like anything, really.
And I suppose it kind of gets you to get to know your food a bit better as well. Like you say, with carrots, you know, you want to cook them at a certain time, a certain temperature, a certain length of time to get the best out of it. So you'll be trying things and they're maybe not at their best. So you get to know that particular food quite well, because you're trying to see the best way to cook it in a different way.
Yeah, yeah. There's so many things and dishes that I've imagined one night, you know, before going to bed, and then the next day I try them and it's just gone completely, you know, the opposite way that I intended and expected, and suddenly that particular ingredient is, you know, okay, well, I can't really do that with that ingredient because it's, you know, it's not working, it's not reacted to the fire how I wanted it. And I think, you know, that can always be the case, and I think that's the joy of it, really, is kind of understanding that certain things don't work. It sounds quite obvious, but the amount of things you burn to a point where it isn't as desirable, you know, that char is too charred and it's completely just hasn't worked, you know, it happens a lot. So yeah, you do get to understand what works, what doesn't. There's lots of surprises as well. You know, we've had a lot of people coming in and really excited to try the cauliflowers that we do, and we put the cauliflowers straight on the fire and we cook them for a good hour, and it picks up so much flavor, so much sweetness, and it almost tastes like caramel in the part, you know, the core of the cauliflower. So I didn't know that a year ago or so, but just through putting these ingredients on the fire and having a look at their reaction, you get to discover all these things.
If you come from a kind of foodie family, or like, you know, I know you said this wasn't really a career path until much later on, but did you have any sort of foodie people in your family that sort of inspired you growing up?
Overall, we weren't a foodie family. My dad was very much, you know, meat and two veg growing up. My mum would cook a lot of fresh food. She was very much into her healthy foods growing up. So we did eat very well. But I'd say it was probably my grandma. We'd cook a lot. We would bake a lot, sorry. We wouldn't cook. We would bake Welsh cakes. And I still stand by that they are the best Welsh cakes anyone can ever have. And we just did that every time. So it was for going to my gran's house, then we're going to bake Welsh cakes. Not that inspired me to be a chef, but even now, you know, when you think back to what maybe inspired you unintentionally or unobviously, then it was those moments baking Welsh cakes.
So you talked about going to US. Was it the job that took you to US or something else? Because you've obviously stayed in Scotland, I'm assuming, kind of since that point.
Absolutely, yeah. It was actually right off the back of COVID. And, you know, I was actually, you know, cooped up in my mother's house and longing to leave. I was discussing a job in Edinburgh. At the same time, this North US job came up, and I just wanted to kind of prove to myself that I could handle these truly wild spaces. You know, I was doing a lot of wild cooking, and I thought, well, if I put myself in a truly wild place such as the Outer Hebrides, you know, and thrive out there and enjoy it, then you know, I'm being honest to my work. And it came up that I had the decision to move to Edinburgh or move to North US and take up this job at Langish. And it was just... It spoke to me, and I just knew that it was going to be those vast beaches and that empty, you know, kind of wild landscape, and I could just see it and imagine it a lot more. And I just moved. Yeah, just didn't look back. And yeah, I haven't left Scotland ever since. I was actually very close. It was very close to living there full time if it wasn't for here, I think.
And do you have a favourite sort of, I mean, obviously this kind of goes without saying, but I'm going to say it. Your cooking is very seasonal and very local, because just by the nature of what it is you're doing. Do you have a kind of favourite Scottish ingredient that you really like working with?
Oh, that is a good question.
I feel like it's like when anyone asks me, like, what's your favourite restaurant? You know, I was a bit like, oh God.
Yeah, I could probably put it to an experience around a Scottish ingredient, and there was It was when I was in North Uist, and a friend of mine, we went hiking along the coastline, and we foraged these wild mussels, and we took them back, you know, washed them, which can be quite, not challenging, but it can be quite a long process, especially, you know, if you pick quite a few. And then the next evening, we took them back to the beach, and we cooked them over the fire, and just a little bit of butter and a bit of parsley, salt and pepper. And for me, that was, you know, one of the nicest experiences in terms of, you know, using a truly authentic ingredient. So I'd say maybe wild mussels. We also used to go fishing for mackerel, and that was another wonderful ingredient that we just, you know, you get back from the trip, and then you'd go off to the beach, have a little fire and fry up these mackerel. And again, nothing else, just a little bit of salt and pepper, and that was it. And we'd eat it, you know, with some fresh bread. Again, that was another, well, yeah, a wonderful ingredient. I'd say mackerel and wild mussels, you know, foraged properly and fished properly, you know, are my favourites.
What can people expect from the experience? And are you continuing on throughout the winter for anyone that's wondering?
We will run until the 10th of December is the current plan. And we might close over January and February and reopening in March. Well, I guess what you can expect from an experience here, it's very rustic. It's very hidden away, and it's very beautiful. It's kind of like going back in time. You know, the estate that we operate on is, you know, it's a family run, full time lived in estate. So it's as it was, and very little has been done to it over the years. So it's a very kind of organic, rustic place anyway. Yeah, it really kind of takes you back in time as you wander around the gardens. And we renovated these old Victorian greenhouses, which just so happened to have a lot of grapevines in one room and a huge fig tree in the other. And, you know, certain times of the summer, there are vast amounts of grapes, which are delicious, and vast amounts of figs that are even more delicious, and fig leaves. And so it's kind of like stepping into this, you know, hidden Scotland slash you could be at some point in the Mediterranean and at other points, you know, along the Mediterranean coastline. It's an amazing, very authentic place. And I think you start to add the element of open fire cooking, and it just creates this kind of unique Scottish experience where you're just, you know, you don't expect to be dining under grapes and, you know, smelling the aromas of fig leaves. So you definitely get that when you come here. And you get fire perceived in a way that's light and citrusy and sustainable, I guess. I'm trying to show people that open fire cooking is not all about fatty meats and grilled fats and it's dripping everywhere and there's lots of flames and chips and all this kind of stuff. It's kind of light and, I guess, Mediterranean in a way, with all these kind of unique ingredients and showcasing them in a particular way that gives them a lot of voice, like vegetables, like cauliflowers. Whereas beef may be the hero of one dish, we're trying to say, well, actually, if you make a cauliflower the hero of this dish, or these blue anise potatoes, for example, I'm really putting emphasis on that. It's really cool. So you can expect a whole different barbecued experience. And I say barbecue because I think people can relate to that the most. You know, it's like, I guess it is just a gigantic barbecue, and we're trying to do exciting, vibrant things with it, as opposed to heavy grilled experiences. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you can stay in the cabins or you can leave. Is that sort of?
Yeah. So originally, when we started, a lot of our customers were coming from the cabins. You know, so it's a 25-minute walk. You know, you book a couple of nights in the cabins, and then on one of the nights, you wander down. You meet myself on the Loch Shore, and then, you know, we wander through the gardens and onto the greenhouse for dinner. And, you know, that was mainly, you know, our concept for quite a few months. And now we welcome anybody. So our supper clubs that we host in the greenhouse, you can camp afterwards if you like. Or you can drive from anywhere and park up and have the experience now as well. So, and more people are doing that, and it's great. More and more people are finding out where we are. We're not so hidden anymore, which is nice.
As we sort of head into the last half of this year and into 2024, do you have any future plans that you can share with us?
Future plans. Well, we'll keep working here, like I said, up until early December. We have a supper club this Saturday, which potentially will be the last. And then we'll keep doing private suppers until we close our doors. Plans-wise, I'll be off to Finland in January to host a wilderness cooking expedition in the Arctic. So that's going to be very fun. In February, I'm staging at Longclume in the Lake District, which is a wonderful restaurant, somewhere I've always wanted to go and cook and to go and learn. Yes, thankfully they've let me come. So that's going to be very good. So I'm working there for 3 weeks, and then we'll be back here in March to open our doors again with some fresh ideas.
And Kelly and I at your door when it's not raining.
yeah, hopefully. It's always a chance. I've never known a place where just brick walls of rain just come, and then suddenly it's gorgeous, and then there it is again. I'd love it in a weird way.
Are there any challenges of being relatively remote? I suppose maybe not if you've got access to all the food you need in your area. Like, you're not waiting on deliveries or anything. So,
no, I mean, we do have a few deliveries. I have a little organic supplier for your pantry goods, etc. I mean, being so remote, we've done really well at finding a little community of suppliers. So we have Kate Glasgow, who lives up the road, and she provides a lot of the vegetables throughout the year. So, and that's only 15-minute drive. So that's pretty good. And I think between the two of us and what we can grow here, especially in the summer, if all goes wrong and we're stuck, then we can still put a menu together. And there's always problems with deliveries, and especially recently with all the rain, had a lot of landslides. So yeah, you never quite know what's around the corner. And if those moments do come, then we're pretty well connected around here in terms of ingredients. So we can always pretty much host, we can always host dinners.
So for anyone, although we're heading into winter, for anyone that does want to try cooking by fire at home, what kind of tips would you give them?
I mean, firstly, getting out there and embracing the weather has its rewards. I think this time of year actually is a wonderful time to go out and cook, simply because there's so many wonderful ingredients that pair so well with a fire, like Jerusalem artichokes and pumpkins and squashes. I mean, they're, especially if you're just starting out, you're just starting to get interested in fire cooking, then those types of ingredients are so perfect. You know, you can even roast them before leaving the house. So you could roast a pumpkin, squash it before you go out, coat it in a little bit of polenta flour, put it in a tub, go and make a fire, and, put your plancha over the fire, and you could fry them up and whisk an aioli, or if you're feeling a little fancy, or you could just coat it with, olive oil, salt and pepper with some fresh sourdough. That would also be very nice. So in terms of advice, I mean, it's just, getting out there, packing your bag full of some very simple ingredients. Don't go crazy. I was definitely a culprit of overpacking my bags in Eurist and taking so many ingredients, and then just realizing that all I should be doing is focusing on one or two ingredients, seeing their reaction with the fire, and then a bit of olive oil and salt, and enjoy it that way. There's no better way of enjoying food than just working with simple flavors, simple ingredients, and not getting too carried away, I think is always a good start. Try something very plain, very simple, and you'll actually find that eating it outdoors when you've cooked it over fire will just elevate it in a way that you hardly need anything else apart from a handful of things.
Nice. Sounds good. Thank you very much, William. It sounds like a really nice experience, and hopefully one day we'll actually get to see you in person cooking over a fire.
Yeah, we'll get there, I think.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I love that idea of strolling along the shoreside in the evening, ready to cook over the open fire and enjoy being in nature. It's on my to-do list for sure. Thanks to William for being my guest on this episode, and thanks to you too for listening. Please remember to rate, review and subscribe so you never miss an episode of Scran. Scran is a Laudable podcast that's co-produced and hosted by me, Rosin Derskine, and co-produced, edited and mixed by Kelly Crichton.